Windy City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This program is brought to you in part by American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
And Miller Lite. Triple Hops Brewed Miller Lite. Taste greatness.
Try and make it look like it's all somehow getting better. Cause I know how to play a pretty good against the measure. Everyone started out a little insane, but we learned pretty quick how to fake it for the game. But some of you never learned to drop the act. So under that skin of yours, a heart attack. Cause everybody's so scared. We don't wanna go there. We don't wanna make a move. We got our lives to lose. Living in the dark well. We just play our part.
And you're listening to the Windy City Queercast, show number 432. I'm Amy Matheny, and it is definitely coming close to the end of summer. We have to pack up those white pants and white shoes. You can wear the winter white, but not the summery white after Labor Day, my mama always said. So this is your last week. Don all your white gay apparel for the next 5 to 7 days, whenever you're hearing this podcast, and enjoy it. And I hope that you are looking forward to a long Labor Day weekend if you live in the States. And if you are living in the Chicago area, you may know a bit about this story because it has been all the buzz all year long. And we are finally dedicating an entire show to the activity, the controversy, the story that has been going on in Wrigleyville, in Lakeview, in an area that we know as Boys Town, Chicago. A controversy over people who live there, GLBTQ youth, issues of race, issues of GLBT harassment, issues of crime increasing, issues of the police not doing enough. It's a hotbed. It's a hotbed of mess. And a lot of angry people started the clamoring in June, and it has lasted throughout the summer. So we are going to be looking a little bit at what I'm calling the Lakeview controversy during today's show. There's lots of other news as well. Come to find out that another lesbian couple was also impacted, an Indiana lesbian couple, in that state fair stage collapse in Indiana that took the life of one of our very own here in the Chicago community. More on that in the gay news, plus what also is going on in entertainment news in the that has been going on in the past week. There's lots of big stories coming out. You're definitely going to want to stay tuned for that. So this is a show to kind of finally air what has been going on this summer, and I'm very happy to have Kate Sawson from Windy City Times, one of our senior reporters, on the show with me today to in-depth look at this entire story from beginning to where it is right now, and the story will continue, so we are just scratching the surface. All right, everybody, put on your white, turn it up, and here we go.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is the Week in News.
Tim Cook, a gay man, is the new CEO of Apple after Steve Jobs resigned August 24th. The company said the switch was made during a meeting of the board of directors. Jobs specifically asked for Cook to replace him.
As Chicago united around Alicia Brennan, hospitalized in the wake of her fiancé's death at the Indiana State Fair last week, Another lesbian widow in Indiana filed suit over her partner's death in the same incident. Beth Urschel, 49, is seeking more than $60 million in the wrongful death of her partner of 10 years, Tammy Van Dam, 42, who died in the stage collapse that killed six others on August 13th. The suit alleges that fair officials failed to take necessary precautions during bad weather that resulted in the collapse of the stage.
In Oregon, Robert Boskett, age 50, was arrested after he physically attacked a gay neighbor and used slurs. Boskett, upset that neighbor David Christensen and his partner trimmed trees that shade Boskett's deck, went over to their residence, allegedly pushed Christensen, strangled him, and used anti-gay slurs.
Jerome J. Shestack, former president of the American Bar Association and a giant in the legal and international human rights communities, died August 18th of renal failure at the age of 88. His first civil rights challenge was as a student at Harvard Law School, as he fought for the admission of women to the same institution.
The National Gay Pilots Association Education Fund recently awarded $22,000 in scholarships to five students pursuing careers as professional pilots. This year, four $3,750 scholarships were awarded. In addition, for the first time, the fund awarded an endowed scholarship of $7,000 to one student.
In California, Ruth Brinker, a retired grandmother who founded Project Open Hand in the late 80s to deliver meals to people living with AIDS, died on August 8th in San Francisco at the age of 89. By 1988, Project Open Hand was serving 500 meals a day. In 1991, it served its 1 millionth meal.
The government is dropping the deportation proceedings that threatened to tear apart a married, gay, binational couple in California, marking the second time in which Immigration and Customs Enforcement has agreed to close a deportation case involving such a couple. There will be a case-by-case review of all current and future deportation cases, and many see this as a milestone in the fight to repeal the Defense of Marriage Act.
In California, the defense rested in the trial of Brandon McInerney, the California teen charged with murdering gay classmate Lawrence King, without McInerney testifying. The prosecution was slated to call one more rebuttal witness, a psychologist who is expected to counter testimony from another psychologist who testified for the defense.
A 19-year-old man was reportedly beaten to death in an alleged anti-gay hate crime in Waterloo, Iowa. Marcellus Andrews died August 21st after being removed from life support. Andrews was allegedly beaten by a group of people who yelled anti-gay slurs at him.
In Texas, Harris County Associate Judge Charlie E. Prine Jr. has prohibited a father from leaving his children with any man he's not related to by blood or adoption, even though there have been no allegations of abuse. The ruling, one that family law practitioners are saying is an unheard-of infringement on the rights of parents, came because William Flowers, the father of three children and his ex-wife, is not only gay, but married to another man.
Legendary University of Tennessee women's basketball coach Pat Summitt has been diagnosed with dementia at the Mayo Clinic. Summitt, age 59, has won 8 national titles, 1,071 games with the Vols, and coached an Olympic gold medal team.
A Florida teacher has been fired because he used to be a gay porn star. Sean Loftus ditched his porn career last year to focus on teaching, but is still widely known by his alias, Colin O'Neill. Loftus was suspended from his substitute teaching job in the Miami-Dade County Public Schools in January. Also, his certification has been revoked despite insisting that he is no longer a porn actor.
Indiana State Representative Phil Hinkle has admitted that he paid 18-year-old Cameron Gibson $80 for sex. However, not only is Hinkle refusing to say that he is gay, but he is refusing calls for him to step down.
In world news, in Indonesia, a lesbian couple has been forcibly separated after one of them posed as a man so they could wed. The unnamed women married a few months ago, but neighbors reported them to authorities. The couple's marriage was annulled, and they have been forced to sign a separation agreement.
In a first for an Australian Prime Minister, Julia Gillard met with representatives from Australian Marriage Equality to hear perspectives on same-sex marriage. A recent poll found three-quarters of Australians believe same-sex marriage will happen soon.
In Canada, the Right Honorable Jack Layton, MP, has died of cancer at the age of 61. A progressive and committed friend of the LGBT community, Layton was a vigorous supporter of the HIV/AIDS activism in the early years of the pandemic. In 2005, many credited Layton for the success of Canada's national same-sex marriage bill, when he was the only party leader to request supporting votes.
In Uganda, the cabinet has stopped an attempt to revive the measure that called for gays and lesbians to be put to death. A small anti-gay movement tried to have the legislation passed in 2009, but ultimately failed.
In entertainment news, luxury department store Barney's is teaming up with Lady Gaga for a Christmas holiday campaign and window display called Gaga's Workshop. Barney's will turn over an entire floor of its flagship Madison Avenue, New York City store to the pop singer's interpretation of Santa's Workshop and will donate 25% of sales from all items featured in Gaga's Workshop to a charity of the singer's choice.
Lesbian country singer Shelley Wright married civil rights activist Lauren Blitzer on August 20th. They married at Blitzer's aunt's Connecticut home. A reverend and a rabbi presided over the ceremony, as Wright is a Christian and Blitzer is Jewish.
True Blood werewolf Joe Manganiello is close to getting a role in the Steven Soderbergh male stripper film Magic Mike. Manganiello is in talks to portray a character named Big Dick Richie alongside a cast that includes Matthew McConaughey and Channing Tatum. Tatum will portray the title character, a stripper who mentors a young dancer.
A drama about the last months of gay icon Judy Garland's life is going to Broadway next spring. Peter Quilter's End of the Rainbow will start performances March 19th. Tracy Bennett, a two-time Olivier Award winner who originated the role of Garland in London, will reprise her role on Broadway. The show will make its U.S. premiere in January at the Guthrie Theater in Minneapolis.
A toxicology report has shown that singer Amy Winehouse had no illegal substances in her system when she died, although alcohol was present. And Amy Winehouse's Back to Black has become the biggest selling album in the United Kingdom this century. A surge in sales since Winehouse's death has helped her second album overtake James Blunt's 2005 release, Back to Bedlam.
Sarah Gilbert, Darlene on the TV show Roseanne, and now one of the co-hosts of the daytime show The Talk, has split from producer-writer Allison Adler after 10 years and two children together. The two will share custody of their children.
Gay icon Cyndi Lauper will release the live concert DVD To Memphis with Love on October 25th. And this fall, she will tour with New Orleans music legend Dr. John. The 14-city tour will kick off October 7th at the House of Blues in Orlando and end on October 28th at the Paramount Theater in Aurora, Illinois.
Cord Overstreet, who played Sam on Glee, will now co-star on the ABC show The Middle as a teacher. Overstreet decided not to return to Glee, reportedly so he could pursue other opportunities.
Openly gay ex-NYPD detective Mark Anthony Caruso is one of the cast members of Survivor's newest season, set in the South Pacific. Caruso even has a profile on the website Bear411.
And the reality competition show The Glee Project ended with a twist as dreadlocked hunk Samuel Larson and Irish exchange student Damian McGinty both won the grand prize, guest starring on 7 episodes of Glee. In addition, runners-up Alex Newell and Lindsay Pierce will also be written into the show with 2-episode arcs.
And that's the weekend news brought to you by Windy City Times.
Let's go to the
I'm Richard Knight Jr., and here's your Night at the Movies Minute. For 30 years, former Mossad agents Rachel, Stefan, and David have been glorified by Israel as the trio that brought to justice a sadistic Nazi war criminal who they found posing as a gynecologist in Berlin in 1965 and who they captured and killed as he tried to escape. But now, in 1997, just as Rachel's daughter has released a biographical account of their actions, the trio find themselves unwittingly drawn back into these decades-old events. That's the nifty setup for director John Madden's taut political thriller The Debt, a remake of a fictional 2007 Israeli film that is helped enormously by its cast. These include both older versions of the characters, Helen Mirren sporting a Yiddish accent and an L-shaped scar on her cheek, Tom Wilkinson and Sairen Hands as and their comely younger selves, this year's It Girl Jessica Chastain, Martin Sokas, and Sam Worthington. The bulk of the picture follows Rachel, Stefan, and David, strangers when they meet, who are bound by their united mission of bringing the Nazi to justice, and who, in the course of that mission, find themselves ardently caught up in an emotionally potent love triangle, which is not surprising as they make for the three most gorgeous secret agents of all time, I think. The movie calls up a myriad of other psychological trio thrillers and works, as noted, because of that good but oh-so-pretty trio and their acting elders. Mirren, as usual, is sensational. and Wilkinson matches her intensity as her morally suspect ex-husband, while Hans, or his hands, I'm not sure, plays a conscience-stricken David with subtle complexity. Though there are lots of credibility gaps as the picture enters its concluding sequence in which Mirren must finally make good on, quote-unquote, the debt owed by the trio, as these political thrillers go, the debt pays off in both departments. I'm Richard Knight Jr., and that's your Night of the Movies Minute.
Hi, this is Christine Eversole, and you're on the Windy City Queercast.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club. Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Weird.
Innovative.
Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of August 29th, 2011, you are in Chicago's Culture Club. Victory Gardens presents In the Next Room, or The Vibrator Play, Sarah Rule's Tony-nominated comedy about female sexuality, intimacy, and marriage in the twilight of the Victorian age. Begins September 9th. Tickets at victorygardens.org.
Babes with Blades Theater Company presents The Double, a 1940s screwball comedy meets swashbuckler in this world premiere tribute to Cyrano de Bergerac. The play centers on Minnie, an actress and stage combatant reunited with her childhood crush, the B-movie starlet Olivia Wood. Performances are Thursday through Saturday through September 24th at the Lincoln Square Theater, 4754 North Levitt. Check out more and get your tickets at babeswithblades.org.
Pride Films and Plays presents Women's Work Weekend, featuring stage readings of four new lesbian plays and four new lesbian screenplays. Over these 5 days, see the next wave of lesbian comedy and drama for the stage and film during Women's Work Weekend at Center on Halsted, September 7th through 11th. Go to pridefilmsandplays.com for more. And for more Culture Club, visit windycitytimes.com.
Anyone out there? Bueller, Bueller, post a comment at windycityqueercast.com.
We're in trouble, so we move on the double.
I don't normally, it is not my practice to do stories that are truly located only in Chicago, because I know many of you live around the U.S. and around the world and don't even get to come to our fair city. Of course, the things I do on a weekly basis and talk about are things that are happening where I live, but most of our interviews and stories are stories that are a little more universal. If I'm interviewing a person, it might be because they're on tour and maybe they are coming to a city near you, or you have access to something that they've produced, a book, an album, a concert tour, etc. But this is a story that we have mentioned briefly in some of our chatter and banter, but I really feel like the story has grown and grown so much that now, even though it's happening here in Chicago, it could be happening anywhere, and it speaks to many issues, I think, going on for our community and public growth and society in general today. So what I'm talking about is what I would call the Lakeview controversy or the Boys Town neighborhood controversy. And if you don't know what that is, you don't even know what Boys Town or Lakeview is, I'm going to tell you all of that and tell you a little bit about the story that has been heating up all summer long. Kate Sausson is the senior reporter at Windy City Times, and she's been covering this story almost since it broke. I don't know exactly when it broke, but because we are affiliated with Windy City Times and Windy City Media, I thought, let's get somebody on to talk about it. And Kate has been doing so much on the Lakeview controversy that I wanted to give her a call and say, hey, join me on the Queercast. So, hey, Kate, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
I'm glad you're here. You've had a busy news-filled summer. Tell everybody, where is Boys Town? What is Boys Town? What is Lakeview, Chicago?
Boys Town, Lakeview. Boys Town refers to a section of Lakeview, which is a north side Chicago neighborhood that is kind of like any city's sort of mainstream gay neighborhood with big rainbow light posts and lots of clubs and parties. It's really sort of a party neighborhood, and then also is home to a lot of social service agencies for LGBT people.
Right. So it's like our Christopher Street in New York. It's like our Castro in San Francisco, if you know those two other big hubs for the GLBT community in the U.S. Now, this is a really large neighborhood or large ward because it also encompasses Wrigleyville, which is where Wrigley Field is, and a lot of, and this neighborhood is definitely, I mean, I've lived here 15 years, and when I moved here, I lived in Lakeview, and that neighborhood has really changed and exploded, and already had by the time I had been here. It was a much different neighborhood, say 30 years ago, but the gay community really came in, right, and made a home in kind of the center of this neighborhood, and created a lot of economic progress for the neighborhood.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's really, even in the last few years too, I think it's really blown up and expanded. You know, it's home to our gay pride parade, which rolls through and is growing every year. It's so big now that the neighborhood almost can't contain it. I mean, it's really, it's the center of LGBT life, whether people want it to be or not. You know, it's really where everything is located.
And a number of years ago, this was determined by the mayor and the city as to where they were going to help support the building of the Center on Halsted, which is the GLBT Resource Center, home community center here in the heart of Lakeview and in the heart of Boys Town. So talk to me about what was the first blip on the radar about trouble in Boys Town or trouble in Lakeview?
Well, going back a couple of years, we've seen this problem before. It's not totally new this year. There's always been this, or not always, but over the last, I would say, at least decade, there's been this conversation about crime or issues in Lakeview, and then arguments over who is causing that kind of tension.
Right.
But most recently this summer, about 2 weeks before Pride, on June 13th, there was a stabbing that happened in a parking lot. It's a 7-Eleven parking lot, and it's right in the center of everything. And it's sort of an empty place where a lot of people gather. And that stabbing happened, and immediately it led to this kind of controversy and tension. People were talking about who did the stabbing. You know, I believe that a person who was of color was charged with it. And so it immediately sort of ignited this old tension. And then I think it really blew up at the Pride celebration, which was so large this year that police just could not control the crowds. I mean, everything was crazy. And so I think, you know, you sort of have this recipe for disaster, essentially. Mm-hmm. People are really on edge in that neighborhood because they feel like, you know, everything is sort of rolling out of control.
And just to give an example, I mean, because I thought that the Pride Parade has gotten too big and too big for its space, perhaps I should say. Like it wraps around, it almost does an upside down U, an upside down V, the Pride Parade. And I've thought for years that it needs to go one straight line, like start them somewhere and dump them somewhere else. But But just for people listening, you know, in another state or another country, how many people showed up for the Pride Parade this year?
The crowd estimates this year were 750,000 people.
750,000 people. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. I mean, and last year, the estimate was 450,000.
Right.
So, yeah. I mean, we've seen almost a doubling of the number of people coming to this event. It was very intense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, the police have to barricade the route now, and it's a scary, I think the parade has now become a scary place just based on the size and where we're all kind of sardines squished into cans between these buildings. So that obviously, as you said, ignited a little more fuel To the spark that it started with the stabbing. And then what happened, the first I really heard of, you know, everything that we've been covering was a Facebook page that started. Can you talk about that Facebook page?
Well, yeah, as in years past, I'm going to say 2 years ago in 2009, a Facebook page that was similar was created, and it gained some steam. It was called Lakeview 911, but it kind of died out pretty quickly. This year, immediately after Pride, in the wake of what we saw were several fistfights, incidents of vandalism, you know, all of these reports of crazy things happening at Pride, this Facebook page is born, and it's called Take Back Boys Town. And essentially, it says that its mission is to take back the neighborhood from crime and from violent incidents, which a lot of residents believe have been on the rise. And so this Facebook page is born, and people start posting videos and start posting information about incidents that have happened to them or that they've heard about. And it just grows. It sort of explodes, and everyone is talking about Lakeview. Mm-hmm. And that's right after Pride. Mm-hmm. I want to say 3 days after.
Now, the Facebook page got pretty heated. How does the GLBT community even factor in, other than a lot of us live there?
Well, I think that we don't know who started the Facebook page because the person hasn't really come forward about it. But we do think that it started in the LGBT community. Boys Town is a phrase that refers to sort of the gay neighborhood or the gay area within Lakeview. And there's a picture of the rainbow pole in Lakeview. So that's... It sort of originates from the gay community. But the other piece of this, which comes in, is that you have a lot of LGBT youth who travel from all over Chicago to come to Lakeview because it's the center of social services.
Right.
The Center on Halsted is located there. The Broadway Youth Center, which is part of Howard Brown Health Center, is there. It's really where youth can get tested, youth can get meals, youth can get access to health services, things like that. And so part of the issue now becomes that some people worry that these youths are making the neighborhood unsafe,
right,
which is where sort of the controversy comes in.
Yeah. Right. So let's can I just ask? Well, first there was a town hall meeting, and there are meetings in wards or in neighborhoods, often quarterly. Sometimes there's a monthly meeting. Around Chicago, but there was a town hall meeting. Why was this town hall meeting unique and different, and who showed up?
The town hall, it was a CAPS meeting, and it got so big that they moved it to a local school auditorium.
Right, and CAPS, for people who don't know, is Chicago Area Police.
So yeah, exactly. And so, and we estimate about over 700 people. There are varying estimates, but it was rather large. It was huge.
Yeah.
And what had happened was a few days before, a couple that's been very active in talking about crime in the neighborhood had caught on videotape a stabbing that happened that involved a large group of young people attacking what appeared to be one or two people. And because that incident was caught on tape and put on YouTube, it was picked up by all the major media here, and it was broadcast all over the world. Everyone was like, what is happening in this neighborhood? And so that, I think, really ignites the conversation further. And what we see are many residents, many service providers, and many of the youth themselves come out and pack this meeting to talk about this specific issue.
But it got hot, right? This first meeting got very hot.
It was a screaming match. I mean, there were so many people, they lined them up behind a microphone, and it was essentially, I mean, people were angry at the alderman because they accused him of not being active enough in this. People were angry at the police for the same reason. Youth were angry at the residents because they said they felt attacked. The residents were angry because they felt like their concerns were not being heard or taken seriously. And so what we had was essentially a two-hour screaming match. I mean, people were jumping out of their seats. They were yelling. One woman said that she had been assaulted at the meeting. I mean, it was really sort of a circus.
Yeah, a recipe for disaster. Not one where a lot of solution or affecting change was really going to happen, but perhaps people just needed to vent. It sounds like it was a night of just everyone feeling like their voice was heard, if anything was done about it or not.
Yeah, I don't know how satisfied people were with the actual meeting. I think that a lot of young people left that meeting feeling really frustrated, but also feeling like they had successfully sort of changed the conversation from talking about crime to talking about racism, which a lot of people feel like is the actual problem here. Mm-hmm. But then I think a lot of residents left feeling like they didn't really get a chance to talk about their issues at all.
Right. Can we talk about, I know that you did a report, or one of our reporters at Windy City Times did a report. What are the realities? What is the increase in crime in this neighborhood? Because, look, I've had people be stabbed on my street. I've had, you know, the Latin Kings had an incident here a couple of years ago and two people were killed. And I don't live in Boys Town. I live in Chicago and it's an urban environment and stuff happens, you know, especially when it's hot in the summer. So crime is everywhere in this city. We don't live in we live in a city where there is a lot of crime, and a lot of it happens in some of the nicer neighborhoods in Chicago. I know drugs and prostitution are almost highest in Lincoln Park. So what are the realities of the crime survey, so to speak, in Lakeview? And do they have data based on just the Boys Town area specifically?
Yeah, we do. Our reporter, Erica Demarest, did a pretty exhaustive study over the last 6 years and found that largely, according to police statistics at least, the crime is on a decrease. It's been slowly dropping over the last few years.
Yeah.
Now, even that statistic is really controversial.
Right.
Because a lot of people say it doesn't deal with their reality. They really, really strongly feel that, that this issue is escalating. Right. And so it's hard to say, you know, a lot of things sort of impact crime statistics, obviously. How many people actually file a report?
Right.
How many people actually complain about these things, you know, how many of these incidents make it to police, how many police take down, whatever the respond or whatever the issue is. But according to the statistics, crime is dropping.
Well, and Kate, you're younger than I am, but I do remember 12 years ago that in that neighborhood, there became a big call before a lot of the bars that are there now were even there. There were some different clubs before some of them had expanded. You know, there was a big call to have the police community in Lakeview, in Boys Town, really come together with the GLBT community to fight hate crime and harassment and all of that kind of stuff in the neighborhood. And the police really showed up for that kind of training and that kind of work. And we should say there's an enormous police station right at Addison and Halsted, which is just south of the center on Halsted. And I mean, south meaning like three doors down and right in the heart of the neighborhood.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, that's what it sounds like too. And it sounds like, you know, we saw the birth of the Pink Angels,
right?
Which is sort of an LGBT volunteer crime fighting group based off the Guardian Angels. Yeah, I mean, this has clearly, I think, been an issue for a long time. What I think has changed maybe is that at one point we were primarily dealing with hate crimes and that kind of fear, and now what we're dealing with is sort of this worry that it could be hate crimes, and then at the same time this worry that it's actually our own LGBT youth. And that's where I think the controversy has been born, because a lot of those youth are saying, look, we don't want to come to this neighborhood necessarily, but we have to. And the reason why is because you won't put services in our own neighborhoods.
What are these demands? I mean, what are both sides wanting? I mean, are the youth wanting to be, have service opportunities and agencies in their own neighborhoods in a more dispersed areas of Chicago, so they don't have to come? Because many of them are coming from not that neighborhood. Many of them are coming from the South Side or the West Side, the suburbs, to try to connect with other GLBT youth. And as you said, that's where a lot of the GLBT homeless youth go, and kids that need condoms or to be tested.
Yeah, that's what we found. And Chicago, as we all know, is one of the most segregated cities in the country. And having all of our resources in one neighborhood sort of creates a strain on a lot of people who have to travel maybe an hour and a half who might not be out in their own neighborhoods and have to risk sort of making this trek across the city. I think one of the biggest sort of concerns is that city funding and private funding is all going into Lakeview, mm-hmm. which is not necessarily safe for everyone.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, where the issue of, you know, violence against youth comes in, because a lot of youth are saying, look, we're being discriminated against in this neighborhood. We don't want to come here, but this is where the services are. Put services all over the city.
Right.
You know, distribute them equally. And so that's sort of the heart of it. And I think that is probably one of the main demands that Gender Just, which is a group that has been really active and very controversial in this discussion, has been demanding for the last year or two.
Is this impacting the service agencies? I mean, for a while, it seemed like this was just a lot of, negative talk against the center on Halsted being on Halsted and being in the heart of Boys Town. Or I know there are other agencies that have been around for many, many years, Night Ministry and others, that this has it impacted, or at least with an organization like Night Ministry, you know, does this challenge them to try to set up services in other locations?
I think it has been a pretty serious challenge to a lot of these organizations. It's hard to say if it's really been a threat, but certainly the center in Halsted has been scapegoated in a lot of these conversations. People are saying, look, things were not this bad 4 or 5 years ago. 4 or 5 years ago, the center in Halsted moved into the neighborhood,
right.
And center in Halsted has a lot of youth services. So people are sort of calling on those organizations to answer to some of these problems. And the center in Halsted has responded by setting up a task force. They're doing self-defense training. They're giving tours and trying to open their doors to create some kind of understanding about what they do. The Night Ministry had its own kind of controversy recently because a lot of residents began calling the bank where the Night Ministry has this mobile bus and it delivers services.
Mm-hmm.
And it delivers services on the street next to a bank. And young people line up in the bank parking lot. And a lot of residents said, you know, after the Night Ministry leaves, we're worried that there are problems here. And so they started calling the bank. So the Night Ministry kind of had to step up and clarify what it does and work with the bank to say, look, we're doing our best to make this safer. So I think everyone is really on edge because people are worried, you know, that their organization could be next, essentially.
Yeah. Where is this story right now? Of course, it continues to change. I do know that you have that Windy City Times has even been, everyone is not going to come together. There are too many different sides to this, but or at least not yet. But people have been upset even at the coverage that you all have tried to tell the story as it's unfolding. Is that true?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. It's really hard, I think, to cover something like this when people care so much, you know, and not sort of become part of the controversy. And the other thing is it's really hard to get concise and consistent messages from people who are part of a Facebook group where there's 3,800 people. You know, it's like PR nightmare. Like,
yeah.
What is everyone saying? You know, like everyone's saying something different. What is the majority saying? Well, we don't really know. You know, so we've sort of become part of that. And I know that other publications have also sort of been implicated in some of this as well.
and they think that you're what? They think that it's biased coverage?
We've heard that. They think that, you know, there's inaccuracies. The big controversy that we had was with the Night Ministry piece and the bus, because people felt that their opinions were not represented. A piece that I wrote, which talked about concerns about the Night Ministry, people were saying, look, we don't want to kick the bus out. We just, you know, we want them to be more responsible. Well, of course, certain people had said, you know, we do want to kick the bus out. But whether or not that was the majority was kind of the debate. And so
right.
we sort of check in with people and try to clarify some of that.
Right. Who do you think is really, I mean, this is obviously, I'm asking for a moment of your editorial opinion because you've just been so on the inside of this. I mean, what do you think it's going to take to affect change here? Are we going to see a disbursement of the GLBT community? I mean, I kind of feel like that's happening anyhow by us within the GLBT community. I mean, there are people who live in Uptown, which is north of Lakeview. I myself and started with a lot of women, but now it's women and men, and trans people live in Andersonville and Edgewater. So we are definitely spreading out. Plus, we've always been in suburbs like Oak Park and other neighborhoods. But do you think it's less the city focusing as though that is the only GLBT hub? I mean, of course, that's big for tourism.
I think for a long time, that neighborhood has been, you know, increasingly affluent and, you know, increasingly white. I think that is a reality. And it's not necessarily because of discrimination. A lot of it is, you know, who can afford to live there, really?
Right.
It's extremely
expensive. I mean, I left that neighborhood because it was outrageously expensive to live there.
And there's a history of issues in that neighborhood in terms of, you know, old businesses and bar owners, you know, carding people of color differently. You know, so that history, I think, is there.
Right. Racism is going to be everywhere.
Right. And particularly, you know, the LGBT community is not immune. And so I think in order to sort of come to some kind of healing place, honestly, it seems like groups are having a hard time hearing each other or meeting on the issues, you know. We have residents saying, look, we do want the youth to be safe. That's why we want more police. And a lot of the youth are saying, look, we don't like the police at all. So how do you come together on that? Or a lot of people are saying, well, look, we don't want to get rid of the center in Halsted. We'll work with the center in Halsted. And then you have groups like Gender Just saying, but the center in Halsted is a problem for us. We don't like the center in Halsted. And then on the other hand, you know, you have residents saying, like, look, we feel really unsafe. My friend was hurt, or my friend was assaulted, my friend got robbed. And people are saying, look, every part of the city is unsafe, so you can't, you know, prioritize your own safety. And, you know, maybe not hearing that it's okay if people feel unsafe. It's okay for people to want to be safe.
Yeah.
What we have to figure out is how do we make everyone safe?
Yeah.
You know, it's an opportunity, but I think that we really have to hear, like, people need a place to heal and come together and feel okay, you know, but.
I mean, I love that you said that because, like, you know, the Chinese, if you use Chinese characters to say the word crisis, it's a violent opportunity. So it really is an opportunity for change. You know, if people can start hearing one another now that they feel they've been able to blow off steam and then they can start to work together, you know, hopefully some solutions can be found. But I still think we've got a long road ahead. And, you know, what it does tell me, too, is that when stuff happens in your neighborhood, it is important to call your alderman. It is important to call the police. It is important to give people a realistic snapshot of what's going on. And I do think that there are people now who, you know, back 10, 15 years ago, GLBT people had trouble reporting crimes. And they weren't heard, they weren't seen. And I don't think that's the case now in many neighborhoods in Chicago. I think that there's been a lot of help in that. Now, maybe I'm naive about that, but I also just think often people don't report crime. And, you know, maybe that would give us a better snapshot of what is and isn't happening. Because as you all say, it looks like crime is decreasing. Is it increasing in a certain street or with a certain age group or a certain, you know, all of that? I think the police are going to be looking at in a far more detailed report because they're going to want this information as well, either to back up what they're saying or to help affect change and find solutions to problems that exist. Well, the story is going to continue, and Kate is going to come back to us from time to time here on the Queercast about just big stories that are going on in the news. They may not all be in Chicago. This one happens to be, but it's an interesting conversation, right, about public opinion, about safety, about racism, about our GLBT community, and even the controversies we have within our own community. It's not always an us against them. Sometimes it's right within our own community that conflict is happening. So, Kate, I appreciate you just giving us a little snapshot of what this very complex story has been over the summer, and hopefully we will get an update from you in a few months as more stuff reveals itself.
Thanks, Amy.
Thanks, Kate. And you can read Kate's article in Windy City Times. That's downloadable at windycitytimes.com. All the issues are there, and you can read about the Boys Town stories. They're all there, and you can find them and read them yourself and learn more about this story by following Windy City Times and following Kate and her fellow team of reporters. Thanks a lot, Kate.
Thank you.
Got something to say? Call us today, 312-21-BE-GAY. Well, everybody, Labor Day is just moments away. It's true indeed. And enjoy these last days of August and wearing your white. I will wear all of my white bra, my white panties, my white pants, my white t-shirt, my white skirts, and my white shoes until Labor Day. And then they all go magically away in my magical gay wardrobe. Oh, but it does feel nice to wear white, doesn't it? Makes me feel like the pure driven snow, and snow's on the way. So we have plenty of white coming down the pike. Not yet. I'm not going to put a Debbie Downer on it yet. Wah, wah. I hope you all have a great week. Bye-bye. Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast. Queer and now.